Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Monday, April 15th. Today, Colorado Sun Outdoors reporter Jason Blevins talks about the 21-year-old skier who died trying to jump the highway up Berthoud Pass and has updates on the backcountry deaths this winter. Before we begin, get ready. By 2034, older adults will outnumber children globally. Colorado-based Next 50 creates economic opportunities for older adults through grants and social investments. Next 50 works to combat age bias, ensure digital equity, and empower older adults to age on their terms. Explore our initiatives and grant opportunities at next50foundation.org. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Few Coloradans have had their story told with less accuracy than Margaret Brown, whom the world knows as the unsinkable Molly Brown, a nickname that originated in the wee hours of this day in 1912 when she survived the loss of the RMS Titanic. In 1886, 18-year-old Maggie Tobin moved from Missouri to Leadville, where she worked in a department store. That spring, she met and married James Brown, a mine manager under banker David Moffett. In 1893, despite a severe economic downturn, James discovered a fortune in gold ore. They relocated to Denver in 1894, joining elite social circles. Margaret spent her life advocating for women's and children's rights and raised money for the victims of the Titanic disaster. Pseudo-historians, as well as stage and screen musicals, obscured much of Margaret Brown's legacy, not to mention her name. Before we continue, we're excited to introduce Pine Melon, Denver and Boulder's community grocery app. Get fresh, locally sourced foods delivered to your door at fair prices. Enjoy the convenience of farm-to-table groceries at home. Their free same-day delivery saves you time while supporting local producers. Use promo code ColoradoSun for $50 off your first order. Now our feature story.
Thanks for tuning in today, everybody. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at the Colorado Sun, and we always like to have a little Monday session and talk outdoors with Jason Blevins on the Sun Up. Hey there, Jason Blevins.
Hey there, David Krause.
Hey, so let's follow up on a story you reported on last week. Kind of very tragic, kind of a big talker around not just Colorado, but across the West, really, in the ski community. The tragic death of a 21-year-old man trying to jump Highway 40 up on Berthoud Pass, well-known area to a lot of people who go to Winter Park. Jason, kind of catch us up on what you've learned about since his death last week and what the talk is in the ski community.
Yeah, Dallas Lebeau, he was a 21-year-old comp center coach at Winter Park, really ripping skier, totally beloved, wildly popular young man, and very likely marked the first road gap ski jump fatality we've ever seen in Colorado. It's sort of a test piece. We've been seeing road gaps since, the old Warren Miller days. I'm sure people can recall some of those old grainy clips of skiers hucking over roads and cars passing through and hucking over trains and semis and all sorts of things. Sort of a test piece for a lot of young aspiring rippers. They all seem to be young men, but very common sort of accomplishment for some of these heavy hitters in the ski world. And this particular young man, Dallas, was lined up there in Berthoud, right by Second Creek, just down below Second Creek on the Grant County side of Berthoud Pass. And Ski Magazine, Sierra Schaefer, the editor at Ski Magazine, had a great interview with his mother and sort of showed that it was something that he'd been working on for several months and had been planning. And there's a suggestion that maybe the warmer temperatures in the snow had slowed his run in. And he came up short and obviously did not make it. Very tragic. But I spoke with a number of pro skiers, just kind of you know, one of the things that I got a lot of response from readers and folks who were kind of wondering more about this stuff. And like you said, it sort of spread, news stories spread across the West. And, you know, there are thousands of online clips out there of people skiing over roads, jumping over roads. And there's a lot of math and, you know, really good, careful planning that goes into these things. And most of these jumps that you see around the West, you know, really California, Idaho, Utah, Montana, Washington, Wyoming, British Columbia, things are all over. They're pretty established. They're known locations. Lots of spots in Colorado, Red Mountain, Loveland Pass, Red Mountain Pass. And this was maybe a new spot. Not sure people had been doing road gap jumps in this particular area before. But talked to a lot of pros about, or a couple few handfuls of pros about, you know, what goes into it. And, you know, they're very careful study of speed trajectory, how much, you know, speed you need, the angle of the jump, all these different pretty intense calculations go into this stuff. And it's not something that's just sort of identified and done in a day. It usually takes a lot of planning. Really kind of a sad situation up there for sure. This kid was widely loved. It's been really interesting to see all the outpouring. There's a GoFundMe for him, and, you know, it's just really soaring. You know, tragic loss of a pretty vibrant young man for sure.
So, Jason, you talked to the ski community, but a big question that I know you and I talked about this is, was this legal, right? You talked to Colorado State Patrol. What did they have to say? And kind of what are some of the rules of the road as far as this goes?
Yeah, you know, I fielded a number of emails and calls after that story from readers who were wondering about the legality. You know, the road was open. And when this young man didn't make it, the road was closed for a while, obviously, you know, for an investigation by the Grant County Sheriff. Grant County Sheriff had never investigated anything like this before. And then I called the Colorado State Patrol and I filed an open records request, asked them for anything involving skiers and, you know, public roadways, skier snowboarders, public roadways. And, you know, specifically looking at whether or not there was any instance of, you know, an investigation into anything like this before. They had not investigated anything like this before. There's a number 8 to 10 records going back the past 5, 6, 7 years involving people using skis, sleds, and toys on a public roadway, which is a violation. But they're all kind of front range-ish, you know, issues. Not a lot of instances of people being cited jumping over a road. It's sort of a legal gray area whether or not, if you are, it's a violation to use skis on a public roadway, but is it a violation to use skis over a public roadway? That is unclear. We have not seen any, according to the State Patrol, their records, they don't show any instances of this before. So kind of an interesting little backstory there, that this is very likely the first time this has happened, and there's a bit of gray area in the legality of that. There's kind of unknown whether or not there's if this young man was breaking any laws when he built a jump that would be jumping a public roadway.
Jason, a horrible tragedy. I always hate to see that this time of year when we've gotten through the year, knock on wood, pretty unscathed in the backcountry, right? You had some interesting numbers in the Outsider last week. Thankfully, a low number of avalanche deaths so far this year. We still have a few more weeks to go. What else did you find out as far as overall numbers with our friends over at the Colorado Avalanche Information Center?
Yeah, talked to Brian Lazar over at the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. He's number two over there, deputy director. And the center's been fielding an inordinate number of reports from skiers who have been caught in slides. 30 people caught in 27 slides in the past few weeks, maybe even more now, now that we're talking a little later. And none of them were injured or killed. To date, we've had, you know, over 100 people caught in avalanches reported to the Avalanche Information Center. You know, people, 37 people buried, you know, 6 fully buried and dug up, revived with CPR, only 2 fatalities. I look back through, you know, 15 years of avalanche records, and we've never had this few avalanche fatalities other than the 2016-17 season, which was very lackluster in terms of snowfall. But there's just an inordinately small, a very small number of people, extraordinarily small number of people who've been killed and seriously injured. Lots of people, you know, being dug up by their partners and saved. And, you know, I asked Brian, what's going on out there? You know, how is this happening? Then he used the word lucky. You know, there's just, things are just breaking in a good way. And, you know, the fatality numbers could easily look a lot worse. And, you know, we still got a big rest of the season to go, and, you know, it could change. But, you know, as of this middle of the season, I'll knock on wood right now, we are very low fatality numbers and looking at being extraordinarily below average in terms of fatalities if we continue this trend. It's pretty interesting. You know, you look at some reports, there were, you know, a snowmobiler there was, you know, buried and dug up 10 minutes later and found unconscious and not breathing and revived with CPR. Couple fellas out in Eastvale, they got really beat up and, you know, rescued by partners and brought down. And, you know, it's just amazing that we've seen so few fatalities when the numbers of people being involved in incidents are up there and average with everybody else. You know, typically we have 7 or 8 by this time of year.
Jason, last thing for today. I mentioned it at the top. Still a lot of snow up here. I can see out the window, especially here in Salida looking out west. A lot of snow still way up high, even though it's gotten warmer over the weekend. River still hasn't come up. How's the rest of the winter season look? Kind of where's the snow settling in?
Yeah, I mean, it's looking good. Every river basin in Colorado is above average. I think state's sitting right around 108-109% of normal. That's good. Very healthy snowpacks. This is typically the time of year when we start to see no more growth in snowpacks and they start to sort of whittle down as we have the warmer temperatures. It's also the time of year when backcountry travelers start to maybe pick up some of those bigger objectives, start to head up to the tops of peaks and get into the alpine and start hitting bigger lines. Stability grows in the spring as the temperatures warm. And one thing that we're seeing, you know, we're seeing these really good freezes at night in the high country, which is great. That means that the snowpack is staying stable. It's not melting and rotting through to the ground. So really good stability heading into these sort of spring season, which bodes well for the low fatality numbers. If we can kind of keep up this transition where the daytime highs are not too hot and really good nighttime freezes, you know, that's a healthy way to transition into a spring snowpack when, you know, travelers are really starting to get out there. So it's all good signs right now in the terms of the backcountry season for this winter.
Jason, always good stuff. Always appreciate your insight and digging up on the background and answering questions for folks on some of these backcountry issues and things. So appreciate everybody else joining in. If you want to read more Colorado Outdoors, go to coloradosun.com. Jason's stories are up there. Also, you can sign up for Jason's weekly Outsider newsletter. Mentioned it during the conversation. Comes out every Thursday at coloradosun.com/outsider. Quick reminder, The Sun is a member of the Trust Project. You can see our commitment to trusted journalism at coloradosun.com/ethics. Jason Blevins, make it a great week.
Thanks, CK.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The Colorado legislature is debating 5 HOA-related bills that would change how homeowners associations interact with residents. One measure would limit attorneys' fees in HOA foreclosure cases, and another would set a minimum bid for HOA foreclosed homes that are being auctioned off. Those came after a Colorado Sun investigation in August found that more than 250 homes in Colorado were sold at auction well below market rate just to pay fees owed, and a large part of the penalties are attorney's fees. State wildlife officials are receiving more reports of dead bats after 2 were found recently with white nose syndrome. The fungal disease has decimated bat populations in the Midwestern and Eastern U.S., but it does not affect pets or humans. Now, Colorado Parks and Wildlife has received at least a dozen more tips about dead or sick bats along the Front Range. The public can help by watching for sick bats in early spring. The disease can cause bats to leave hibernation early and fly during the day, or it can dehydrate bats and prevent them from flying. Regents for the University of Colorado are still considering whether to impose a ban on people carrying concealed weapons on their campuses. Concerns over campus safety continue to mount from student and faculty in the wake of a deadly shooting on the Colorado Springs campus in February. No action was taken during regent meetings last week, but they plan to take up the issue again during their next meeting in June. A petition to ban firearms began circulating shortly after two people were found dead in a dorm. Concealed carry has been allowed on all CU campuses since 2012. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
I'm Lauren Wynott, Director of Membership at the Colorado Sun. I came to work at the Sun because quality, trustworthy journalism is important. As a reader and listener, I find the Sun to be a breath of fresh air. The journalists tell Colorado stories that keep me informed, entertained, and engaged. If you also trust the Sun for your news, join me as a member at coloradosun.com/join. Your support helps to bring you and other Coloradans the news you deserve. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you.